pattern where we have some sun, some clouds, and a chance of showers and thunderstorm Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, even into Saturday. At least for Wednesday, we'll have a high of 82 degrees, near the same on Thursday. We are currently at 86 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Year Bank studios of WISR 680 AM with your news at noon. News time is just about 12:30. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525. And now, It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, is it hot enough for you? Yeah, this is the second straight day of the heat wave. Although, you know, it was pretty nice over the weekend. I can't argue with that. But yesterday, we really started to cook. We got up to 89 yesterday afternoon. And we're well on the way to that again today. Upper 80s is the prediction from the National Weather Service. Maybe a thunderstorm, maybe not. It's already 88 degrees. Here we are, 12:30 in the afternoon, and it's 88 here in Butler right now. That's a heat wave, no question about it. So, and, you know, he got around 90 degrees. And who knows, maybe we even surpass that a little bit today. That's the danger zone. So you want to be sensible. You know, if you don't have to work outside, don't do it. You know, hold off on mowing the lawn. Lawns are starting to very quickly go dormant anyway here with the heat. You know, if you don't have to work in the flower bed or the garden, wait till this evening. It cools off a little bit. And, of course, there are people who have to work outside. And some people's jobs take them outside. And they know that they've got to dehydrate constantly in weather like this. And, you know, be sensible. Going to take a walk? Is that your afternoon routine? Wear a hat. Yeah, it is a real cooker today. It's not going to be quite so hot if the forecasts are correct tomorrow and Thursday, but an increased chance of a shower or a thunderstorm by then. So we'll see. When do I check the humidity? What's that? That's down to about 60%. So, I mean, it's still a little humid. You know what it was this morning, 5 o'clock? Relative humidity was 95%. And the temperatures were in the upper 60s. I mean, it was really sticky first thing this morning. Well, be careful. Enjoy it. And now it's the first real heat wave of the summer, and we waited a long time for this. So enjoy it. Just be careful. Nothing to play around with when you get this hot. Coming up on the program today, we have quite a few guests, and we love it when we get a day like that. Later on today, we will be chatting with folks about the Butler County Youth Leadership Initiative. Amy Metrick will be here to talk about that, along with Michael Liebler, I believe, who's the founder of Connecting to Tomorrow. So they'll be coming in to join us a little bit later on the program today. And also today, we'll have guests from the Sing Hosanna, a performing arts group. They're getting ready for, and I think they do a youth program in the summertime. For the younger kids in their performing arts group, Sing Hosanna. So we'll talk to some of the cast members of that. It's this weekend, I do believe. So we'll get the details on that a little bit later on the program today as well. Our first guest, though, and he'll be joining us by telephone in just a couple of minutes here. His name is Mark Bowden. Maybe you don't recognize the name. What if I mentioned Black Hawk Down? Black Hawk Down. Did you see that film, Black Hawk Down? I suppose, I don't know, 5 years ago. I can't remember exactly when. It's relatively new. He wrote the book, Black Hawk Down. Mark Bowden. It turned into a very, very successful film. Huge box office receipts for Black Hawk Down. Well, he's out with a new history. And for some of you who are baby boomers, maybe a little bit older, maybe a little bit younger, I think you'd be interested. I know I am. It's a history of perhaps the crucial battle in the Vietnam War. And, boy, when my review copy of Mark's book came in, I just started thumbing through it initially before I started reading it. And, man, oh, man, some of the names that come back. You know, if you came of age during the Vietnam War or shortly thereafter, William Westmoreland, General William Westmoreland was the American general who was in charge of the American troops for much of the year, not the whole time. He eventually got relieved. Lyndon Johnson, of course, LBJ, who was president during the big buildup of troops. It actually started, the U.S. started sending advisors to Vietnam when John Kennedy was still president. But then LBJ, and some other names. Names of the cities, Mekong Delta, Saigon, right? Yeah, Hanoi. All those names come flooding back, including the city of Hue. Hue, I've got to be honest with you, I'd forgotten all about that name of that town. The city of Hue. And that's the title of Mark Bowden's new history. Hue, 1968. This was perhaps the biggest battle in the Vietnam War, which stretched over 10 years, if you count the time the advisors were there. And it was also one of the deadliest battles for the United States. U.S. troops took a real beating. And during this battle, it was part of the Tet Offensive. There's another. I mean, when's the last time you heard these names, these phrases? The Tet Offensive. Yeah. So it's a pretty neat book. I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing yet. It's an extensive history. It's a big book, but very, very fascinating. The man's name is Mark Bowden, the author, historian Mark Bowden. His previous work, Black Hawk Down, it was the title of the film. It was also the title of the book he wrote, Black Hawk Down. It was a number one New York Times bestseller. He writes now for The Atlantic, Vanity Fair, and other magazines. He was a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer for some 20 years. And very much into historical research. He did a lot of research for this book. Mark Bowden. We will meet him coming up here on WISR in just a couple of minutes. He'll be joining us by telephone. He'll be our leadoff guest on the program today. So let's take a quick break. Mark Bowden, when we come back on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We are speaking today with Dr. Edward Reedy from Tri-Rivers Surgical about electrodiagnostic testing, also known as EMG testing. Dr. Reedy, when would someone need an EMG test?
Patients typically will need an EMG if they have been seen by an orthopedic surgeon for a pinched nerve, or alternatively if their family doctor or neurologist is investigating them for a more serious neurologic condition. The test itself is relatively painless and has improved in its discomfort over the last several years and generally takes about a half an hour.
To learn more, call Tri-Rivers Surgical at their new office near the Clearview Mall in Butler, toll free 866-874-7483. That number again is 866-874-7483.
Listeners, we're going to talk a little history here today, and maybe history that needs to be revisited. On this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our special guest visits with us by telephone. He is author Mark Bowden, and he is the author of a new book entitled Hue, 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. First of all, Mark Bowden, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you, Dave. My pleasure.
I mentioned maybe time to revisit because, you know, all of a sudden, even for baby boomers, Mark, Vietnam seems to be a long time ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, but I was a teenager when it happened. I was in high school, and I have vivid memories of seeing the reports on television and looking at the pictures in Life magazine and reading about it in the newspapers.
Well, some of the names come back to me as I have a review copy of your book here in front of me. Even the name Wei. And I do hope I'm remembering the correct pronunciation of that city. Wei, is that
you
right?
You are.
Yeah.
Correct, yes.
And it's pronounced, listeners, if you're in a bookstore or looking online for Mark's book, it's spelled H-U-E, but it's pronounced Wei. And this was a city in South Vietnam, a significant one, right, Mark Bowden?
It was. It was the third largest city in South Vietnam, and it is the ancient capital of the unified country. So it had a tremendous symbolic significance in Vietnam as a symbol of a united country.
And thus the plan, the secret plan of the North Vietnamese to occupy Hue.
Right, and you know, and the effort was not just they didn't want it to be perceived as an invasion of the north into the south, and that's part of the reason they chose Hue, because it is a symbol of the united country, and they even went so far as to design a special flag to fly over the city. It was not a Viet Cong flag or a North Vietnamese flag; it was one that was designed to represent the various factions in the city and to be a symbol of a popular support for independence. So that was, you know, the goal in taking the city, and it had a profound effect, I think, both in South Vietnam and also in the United States.
Geographically, can you locate Hue for us in South Vietnam relative to Saigon, for example?
Yeah, it's north of Saigon. The country of Vietnam kind of bulges at the top and at the bottom down in the delta, and it reaches a point in the midsection that's very, very narrow. I mean, you can drive at that point from the South China Sea to the Laotian border in a couple of hours, and Hue is located right in that kind of pinched middle of Vietnam. During the war, it was about 50, 60 miles, maybe a little bit more, maybe 100 miles south of the line demarcating North Vietnam from South Vietnam.
Hue 1968 is the title of your book. By the way, folks, this is extensively researched. It's a big book. Does the name Mark Bowden sound familiar to you? He's the author of Black Hawk Down, a previous book, military history book, that, by the way, was turned into a very successful motion picture, I believe. Right, Mark?
Yeah, that one did pretty well.
And there are already plans, I understand, from your publicist. There are people that have already taken film options on your latest book, Hue 1968.
Michael Mann, who's a fairly well-known producer and director in Hollywood, is developing a 10-part miniseries for television, I think, on the FX channel. They've just the book just came out last week, but they've already been at work for a little while.
Mm-hmm. We need a little bit of a primer here for folks who have even vague memories of the Vietnam War. And, of course, we have a lot of listeners now who have no personal memories of it. America really got involved in Vietnam in the early 60s. We had sent so-called advisors there, right, after the French defeat at Dien Bien Phu.
Right, a little after that we did. And, you know, this was a time during the Cold War when there was this very simplistic notion that communism was this monolith that was spreading throughout the whole globe and that it was a responsibility of the United States and other freedom-loving countries to defend democracy in the places where the communism was spreading. And so we sent troops in large numbers to Vietnam in 1965 to try to support the what was thought to have been a democratic government in South Vietnam. It turned out it really wasn't terribly democratic, but we were supporting it at any rate, and we supported it to the tune of 500,000 troops by 1967. And we had been told by the president and by the military command that this was going to be a fairly simple, quick war. That, and in fact, at the end of 1967, General Westmoreland had given a speech at the National Press Center saying that the war was going to be over in the following year. And then then came the Tet Offensive, which I write about, and Hue was the sort of the biggest thing about the Tet Offensive, which demonstrated that that Hanoi, the North Vietnamese government, had tremendous capabilities that the United States had failed to recognize, and that this was not going to be a simple, easy victory. And for that reason, it began to turn American public opinion against the war.
My knowledge of America's Civil War is limited, but I seem to recall that Antietam was the bloodiest single battle of the Civil War. Hue, 1968, your book, that was the bloodiest battle of the Vietnam War, was it not?
It was. You know, I think conservatively estimate that 10,000 people lost their lives in the Battle of Hue, which is far and away the most significant conflict of the war. Most of the fighting in Vietnam took place in the rice paddies and jungles and mountains. This was an urban battle, much more akin to a battle in World War II in Europe or in Seoul during the Korean War. And it was, you know, completely, it came as a complete surprise to the American public. So the fact that the North Vietnamese were able to take the third largest city in South Vietnam and hold it for a month really, I think, was a devastating blow to the idea that the war was well in hand.
The Battle of Hue came during what became known as the Tet Offensive, which I believe is Lunar New Year for the Vietnamese. Where does that fall on our calendar? When did this battle take place, Mark?
It kicked off on the eve of Tet, which was January 31st of 1968. Tet is the biggest holiday of the year in Vietnam, and it's celebrated over really the first week of February in most years. It follows the lunar calendar, so it varies a little bit. But that year, it began on January 31st, and it lasted, you know, as the battle itself lasted, until the end of February.
As I understand it from reading your book, I didn't know anything about this previously, the North Vietnamese, I guess specifically the National Liberation Front, had made this a very clandestine operation, and they were able to suddenly come forth with, I don't know, some 10,000 troops surging out of the forests into Hue. Did it take the American command to completely by surprise?
It did, and I think it's really telling that it did. You can't amass a force of 10,000 troops in an area outside of a major city without the locals noticing. And yet in the months it took to accomplish that, no one sounded an alarm to the Saigon government or to the American forces. So it kind of gives you a sense of the degree of popular support that the Viet Cong had, especially in the countryside around the city. And I think that's one of the reasons why this wasn't just a surprise to the American command, but ultimately a really serious blow to its ambitions.
And as I understand it, again from your book, it wasn't just troops that suddenly swooped in, but there were advance parties, you term them young idealists, who kind of set the stage for this so that it perhaps would be more accepted by the people of Hue.
Yeah, I mean, well, the North Vietnamese regulars who were filtering down the Ho Chi Minh Trail had no knowledge of Hue, and they couldn't have even found themselves into the most important parts of the city, so they relied on the local Viet Cong, but also the young people who were recruited in the years before this offensive to create small cadres of resistance fighters. So you had someone like Che Ti Mung, who was an 18-year-old village girl who was recruited with 10 other girls from local villages to go into the city for months prior to the Tet Offensive to spy on American forces and South Vietnamese forces. And then ultimately, Che was responsible for guiding these armed forces into the city to specific locations to occupy it.
Listeners, we have a bit more time to chat with Mark Bowden, author of Way, 1968, The Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. We must take a quick break. We'll do that, and we'll be right back to continue our conversation after these words. Butler Motor Tours has lots and lots of vacation ideas for you, not only this summer, but on into the autumn, because, you know, all of a sudden we're pointing toward the middle of June already. Well, if you haven't made vacation plans yet, let me give you a couple of ideas that you can travel through Butler Motor Tours. You know, they've been taking folks from our area to places near and far for 77 years now. Pretty amazing. They're on South Monroe Street in Butler, local company. When you travel with them, first of all, it's affordable. You travel on one of their big luxury coaches, one of the big cruisers. It's nice. It's comfortable. It's fun. Yeah, a lot of folks go with spouse, partner, friends, neighbors, church group, whatever. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, church groups, they are taking trips, two of them, to the Ark Encounter this year. Now, this is brand new because this just opened in Williamstown, Kentucky. It's just south of Cincinnati, just over the Ohio River. And yes, it's a full-size replica of Noah's Ark according to the dimensions given in the Bible. An engineering marvel, it's considered the largest timber frame structure in the world. It is huge, and it's filled with lots of world-class exhibits. A trip in mid-July, 3-day trip, and another one in September, a little longer trip. Get the details online at their website, butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. Or you can pick up one of their brochures. That would work, too. They have sightseeing packages. They've got trips that you'll get to your destination and then ride trains, including fall foliage train trips. They've got show tours. They've got lots of vacation ideas. Here's their website again. It's a great website, butlerbus.com. Butler Motor Tours, online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. Welcome back, listeners. If you're just joining us on the It's Your Turn program, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey, our special guest, author, historian, Mark Bowden, and we're talking about his latest book, Way, 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. Mark, why was this such a significant turning point for the Americans?
I think largely, Dave, because President Johnson and General Westmoreland and other American leaders had been promising the American people that the war was well in hand, that it was going to be over fairly soon, that American troops would begin withdrawing from Vietnam in 1968. And the Tet Offensive, and in particular the takeover of the city of Hue, ran directly counter to the assurances that they had been giving. And I think a lot of Americans woke up to the fact that this was not a minor military operation in a distant country, but rather a major war that was going to absorb, you know, a tremendous amount of America's resources and take a lot of young American lives.
The names that come back in reading your book, Mark, William Westmoreland, I hadn't even heard that name in years and years and years. He was the American general in charge of everything over there. He either underestimated the number of troops that were coming into Hue, North Vietnamese, either underestimated or purposefully misrepresented it. Which was it? Or maybe both. I don't know.
I think there was a little of both. I think, frankly, General Westmoreland and my understanding of him, and I learned a lot about him researching this book, was very convinced of his own theories. He could dazzle you with the presentation of what was going on in Vietnam and how the United States was going to systematically win the war. And he was so wedded to his theories of what was going on in Vietnam that when he was presented in the case of Hue with something that directly contradicted his ideas, he didn't change his thinking, he denied it. And he didn't just deny it to the public, to reporters, as some sort of public relations strategy. He was denying it in cables to the White House and to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was claiming that there were really only a few hundred enemy soldiers in Hue, and that the American forces would quickly retake the city, and that it wasn't a really serious problem. And to be honest, I mean, he never changed his tune, even after all these lives were lost and that terrible month of fighting. If you look at his memoirs, which were written like 20 years later, he devotes all of about five paragraphs to the Battle of Hue, which was far and away the most significant battle fought under his command.
And as I understand again from your book, he continued to insist to the press that the big battle, if indeed it came, would not be at Hue, but would be at Quezon, which turned out to be right. Just a diversionary buildup of troops by the North Vietnamese.
Yeah, and you know, and this, because that Quezon outpost corresponded with his theory, which was that the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong lacked the capability of attacking South Vietnam's cities. They really only had the ability to harass American and South Vietnamese forces on the perimeters of the country, so in the jungle, in the mountains. And Quezon was this marine outpost that sort of straddled the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and he had convinced himself that this was going to be the location where North Vietnam and the Viet Cong would concentrate their attack. And he continued to believe it even after they took the city of Hue and were flying their flag over the citadel for weeks.
I can't help but think of the parallel to the Normandy invasion of World War II. I was talking with historian John C. McManus, who was a guest on our program not too long ago, and he told the story of how Eisenhower sent George Patton up into East Anglia, where they had cardboard tanks and rubber blow-ups of equipment, trying to convince the Germans that the Normandy invasion was going to come at Pas-de-Calais instead of where it actually came. You know, this big diversionary move, which was absolutely successful, just as this appeared to be. Even after the losses, though, I understand from your book that Westmoreland, I mean, the press was saying this was a disaster. He tried to build it up as an American victory or something.
Oh, yeah, he pronounced the Tet Offensive to be a complete failure about 48 hours after it happened. Meanwhile, his forces were getting creamed in Hue, and it would take another month of fighting to take the city back. Basically, they had to destroy the city to take it back. So it was astonishing to me, looking back at his statements and in the secret cables that he was sending to Washington, how effectively he simply denied what his own commanders on the ground were telling him about what's going on in Hue. And this wasn't just, you know, a curiosity. The fact that he denied it got a lot of Americans killed, because they were being ordered in Hue to attack a far superior, well-entrenched enemy force, and they were getting creamed day after day, and they would continually be ordered to go back out and assault these impregnable positions.
Our time begins to run short, but you write in your book, Mark, that journalism has long been blamed for losing the war. Journalists weren't buying the accounts that William Westmoreland was putting out after the Tet Offensive. They knew that this was something bigger. Let me ask you about one more thing. I'm sure many of our listeners remember the story of Walter Cronkite on the CBS News. Actually went to Hue, and then he made a telling remark on his evening news broadcast shortly thereafter.
That's right. And, you know, Walter Cronkite had been a war correspondent during World War II, so he knew the difference between reports that came from the front lines and the official version, which sometimes came from headquarters. And he was angry when the Tet Offensive occurred, because he felt that the reports that he had been delivering on the CBS Evening News as the anchor were distorted, that he effectively was being used to sell the American public on something that wasn't true. So when he went to Vietnam and saw for himself what was going on in Hue, he was angry, and he came back and he delivered his own assessment of what was going on in Vietnam, and he said he felt this was not a war that the United States could win, and that it was effectively at a stalemate and that we needed to find a way to get out.
And that was at the tail end of February, next to the last day of February, 1968. And I'm truncating here because our time is gone, but it was just a few weeks later, right, that Lyndon Johnson announced he wasn't going to seek re-election. And then General Westmoreland was replaced, and we could see that this was a massive turning point.
Yeah, it was no longer a debate over how to win the war. It became a debate on how to end the war, how to get out.
Tragically, it took several more years, did it not?
It did, because Richard Nixon was elected because he had a secret plan, he said, to end the war in Vietnam. And instead, he invaded Laos and Cambodia and extended the war for another 5 or 6 years.
Listeners, you will not find a better account of Way, 1968, to the title of Mark Bowden's new book about the turning point in the American war in Vietnam. It's just out, right, Mark? Just published?
Just last week.
Nice to talk with you, sir. Thanks for making time for us today.
My pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. So long now.
Bye.
Introducing a new cooking podcast, Now That's a Mouthful. This weekly program explores the shared experience of cooking and the challenges of preparing new and different recipes. Discover something new, whether you're a raw beginner or a seasoned pro in the kitchen. New episodes of Now That's a Mouthful are available every Wednesday. Start listening today at nowthatsamouthful.org or on your favorite podcast app.
As the sun rose on a warm spring morning, four travelers, known simply as the Daltons, rode into Gettysburg, PA. History has all but overlooked the Daltons' quest for fun activities. The Daltons found the options in Gettysburg nearly overwhelming. Segway tours of battlegrounds, biking, and horseback trails. And when Jeb, the youngest Dalton, saw Gettysburg's famed cyclorama, he was overheard to say, "Cool."
Make your own history. Visit DestinationGettysburg.com.
Do you like to talk as much as I do? Good. Join me for Let's Talk weekday mornings at 11:15 on WISR. I'm Tracy Morgan. We talk medical issues, natural health options, batteries, jobs, food. We take a look at the housing market in and around Butler County. Listen on the radio live, on the free app, or even as a podcast. All with the fabulous experts in and around Butler. I ask the questions, they get to answer, you get the benefit. Let's Talk weekday mornings on WISR 680 AM.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. That's a fascinating conversation with Mark Bowden, author of Black Hawk Down. And this new book is going to be made into a movie, too. I think it's going to be just as good as Black Hawk Down. Way, 1968. Well, much more to come on the It's Your Turn program today. A little bit later, we're going to have guests with us from the upcoming Sing Hosanna performing group production of Aladdin Jr., which is a youth show that's based on the Disney animated film. But their production is coming up this weekend, and we'll get all the details about that. Some of the cast members will be here. But first, we want to talk about an upcoming event that involves the Butler County Youth Leadership Initiative Group, and we have a couple of guests here to talk about that. First, let's say hello to Amy Metrick. She is a 4-H Program Assistant with Penn State Extension. Amy, nice to have you here today.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yes, and also with us is Stephen Snow. And Stephen, you're with Justice Works, am I correct on that?
Correct, Justice Works Youth Care.
And what is Justice Works Youth Care?
Yeah, so we provide independent living services for youth 14 to 21 here in Butler through juvenile probation and children and youth services.
So these would be youth at risk for one reason or another, perhaps?
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes not of their own making, by the way. It's just circumstances that they find themselves in, huh?
Yeah, transition age youth is a huge need of a population here in Butler, so we really try to target and serve those kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, how the heck is Penn State Extension involved in this and 4-H, Amy Metrick?
Well, I am new to this. I've only been doing it about a month, but our lady who was here before us received another job, so I got thrown into it. And like 4-H and ourselves, we teach about leadership and responsibility and just growing great kids in Butler County.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to help out with that.
Gene Coomer previously was involved with the 4-H program here, and we know Gene very well. And I think 4-H has teamed up with the Leadership Initiative, perhaps even since it got underway. I'm not sure. A couple of years anyway. Steve, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, I know with JusticeWorks, it'll be our one-year anniversary here in Butler, July 11th. And, you know, ever since we got here in the county, this is our second one, partnering with them and having our kids be a part of that. So
I think there's a number of other agencies that are loosely tied in one way or another. Connecting to Tomorrow, I know, is, I've talked with Michael Liebler about that. He's the founder of that agency. It's a mentoring group, you know.
Yeah, we also have Stand Tall and, I think that's Stand Tall and like you say, Connecting to Tomorrow.
Stand Tall, that's a group that's involved with the schools, I think, isn't
correct,
it?
Correct,
Stand
yeah.
Tall.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you've had events. You mentioned this will be your second one. What was the first one? What was that all about, Stephen?
The first one was drug and alcohol prevention group. We had the folks from Dialed in Action Sports come in and do a BMX tour with the kids.
BMX, that's bicycles, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. I'm not up on that acronym, that lingo, so you have to help me out a little bit here.
Yeah, so after the BMX folks did their tricks and, you know, were very close to touching the ceiling down at Butler Catholic Gym, they were broken into workshops and four different workshops to talk about drug prevention led by the 4-H mentors.
Wait a minute. They were doing those jumps and somersaults inside the Butler Catholic School gym on bicycles?
Yes, they were.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think they were trying to hit the roof.
Well, I could see how they would. That scares me just to watch those things. But, hey, the young people would have loved it, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So what's coming up now? You have another one later this month, right?
Yes, we have one next week, next Tuesday. June 20th from 5 to 8. So they're going to do like a grocery simulation, learn some cooking, budgeting skills, just to focus on some of those independent living skills that we feel that they need.
And what are the particulars on this, Amy, when and where and so on?
It's going to be June 20th, and it's going to be at St. Andrew's Church up just past the Clearview Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah, that's right on Route 8.
Right, just, yes.
I don't know, what, half a mile north of Clearview Mall, maybe not even that much, I don't think. Yeah.
And I believe it starts at 5 p.m. and it goes till 8, and like Stephen said, we'll have all kinds of activities and things for the kids to do.
Mm-hmm. Is there a charge for young people to go to this?
No cost.
No?
No, just kids, I think 12, we said 12 to 18, so.
Will there be any food involved? It seems to me when I was talking with Gene in the past, at least one or two of these, they had I don't know, lunch or snack or something. The point is, do you need to register if you're going to go so they know how much to have on hand?
Yes, there is. We do ask them to register, and that's Mike's phone number, which should be 724. If you call Connecting to Tomorrow at 724-431-6025, extension 804, that way we can get a head count on how much food we're going to need for the event.
I'm sure you can get that from their website, Connecting to Tomorrow. Yeah. They'll hook you up with that information if you need to contact. Did you mention a deadline there, Stephen?
June 16th, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that would be the end of the week.
This Friday.
Yeah, because the event is next Tuesday. So what's going to happen? Will you have speakers? Have they been identified yet, or do you have an agenda for the evening?
Yeah, we're going to have Esther Volker. She is the FNEP nutrition education person in our Butler Extension office, and she deals with low-income families that have children and teaches them about how to buy food on a budget and how to eat well on a low income. Mm-hmm. So she's going to talk to the kids about that and how they can do that.
Well, you're looking at a double whammy here, I suppose, in terms of not knowing a whole lot about good nutrition. Number one, these are younger people, young adults, maybe not know too much to start with. And number two, they may not have a lot of economic wherewithal. So, you know, you end up eating pizza all the time, something like that, right?
Right.
Tastes good, but it's not so good for you, I think, on a long-term basis. Huh?
Yeah, we're really trying to teach that box pizzas can only go so far in your budget, and how you can grocery shop and still eat some quality food and save some money at the same time.
Does this take the whole evening, or what? Do we have any idea how long the program is going to be?
Yes.
An hour or two?
It's going to be from 5 to 8. They're going to start with some, like Esther's going to speak to them, and then they're going to receive a job that just pretty much picked from random, and they're going to have a wage with that job. And from that wage, they're going to have to go through their needs and their wants and decide what they need, what they want, and then they're going to have to go shopping, so to speak, and decide what they'll have. And then at the end, we'll have a little fire, and they can cook their own food and play a game of The Price is Right.
Do they do this individually, or do they team up? Do you know?
I believe it's going to be individually.
Okay. Well, that would be scarier yet. Don't have anybody to rely on for advice, huh?
Yeah, I got to put your thinking cap on.
Yeah. So did you participate in this the last time around, Stephen? Did you go as an observer or something?
Yeah, so we've had our kids at actually the last two, I think. I know I had mentioned the drug prevention one. We also did a career fair recently. So our kids have participated in each of the youth leadership initiatives the past year. So this is the third one. Correct me from before, but this is the third one that we've done, just getting our kids involved to learn different life skills.
Have you had any feedback from the kids, from the young adults?
And that's actually how these all kind of came about, was feedback from the kids, what they wanted to see, what they wanted to learn more about. So after the drug prevention one, we did a survey, and that led into the career exploration one, and we did another survey, and they wanted to know more about cooking and budgeting. So that's how this one came about, and once again, I'm confident the kids will shed some light on what our next one is.
Mm-hmm. How many kids usually go to this?
We had probably between 30 and 40 the last couple, so right around there.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no charge, so you're not going to beat the price anyway, huh?
No.
I suppose, I don't know, when I was in high school, we still had very gender-specific class offerings. When I was in junior high school especially, all of the guys took something that was known as shop class. And all of the girls took, at that time, was called home economics. I'm sure they have a new name for it today. Food science or something like that, I suppose. But it was the stupidest thing. At the time, that was just considered role models, I guess. I would have done anything when I got a couple of years older to have known how to cook, how to prepare a food budget and that sort of thing. You know, what did I learned how to build bookends, which I already knew how to do anyway, you know. So these are great skills for young people to have.
Yeah.
Do you get a cross-section of both the young men and young women at these, from what you've seen, Stephen?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good, you know, disbursement, split between males and females. And, you know, it's that whole idea of what you put in is what you get out of it. So, you know, because it's not anybody pressuring them to come there, it's, you know, free of charge. It's, you know, if you think these skills are going to benefit you, you know, you're going to be there. So
do you have any idea about the future plans? I assume that this youth initiative will continue into the next couple of years anyway. It seems to have been a success so far. Any idea what's planned ahead?
Like Stephen said, the kids kind of tell us what they are looking for and what they're interested in, and then we build from there and try to give them something that they'll enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Well, the event that was held last fall, it was in October, that was the drug prevention theme. And the first one, which was a year ago, was this was led by the 4-H Student Leadership Group. Now, that's a group of 4-H'ers from various clubs, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's our youth council. And how that works is each club in the county, which we have about 30 of them, each vote on having one member to represent them at this youth council meeting. And then those kids are the kids that kind of get things going and get kids interested and get them at events. So the leadership one for that, I believe, like you said, they did the different kinds of leadership activities and taught to the kids. And when kids are learning from kids, they sometimes listen better.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, from your peers, you know, absolutely. So that would be the student leadership group, be kind of like analogous to a student council, maybe that they had in high school or something like that. Yeah. And each of the 4-H clubs in Butler County gets to send a representative?
Yes, a representative and alternative.
Mm-hmm. 4-H clubs are quite a bit different from what they were a generation or two ago, are they not?
Yes, they are.
Did you grow up in a 4-H family, Amy?
I did, yes. My family, we have a farm out in Mount Chestnut, and I grew up showing pigs and sheep in 4-H and did a vegetable garden. And so, yeah, 4-H has a special spot in my heart.
Mm-hmm. Your dad is Ken, right?
Correct.
Ken Metrick. A lot of our listeners will know him.
Yes.
Yeah. So you've been involved with 4-H probably most of your life, most of what you can remember. Anyway,
most little girls want to be princesses and stuff. I wanted to show pigs like my cousins. So that's what I did.
Well, as I understand it, 4-H has evolved. I mean, there's still certainly an agricultural component for people who either are in a farm family or may want to pursue that as a career later on. But there's lots of other stuff, too. It's like, I mean, you can build robots and stuff like that
right.
in 4-H.
We have robotics, we have wildlife, we have cooking and sewing and all the livestock. We have pets, we have a guinea pig project. You can do pretty much anything and we'll find you a project.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit with Stephen Snow. For those of you who have joined us a little bit late, Stephen is with Justice Works. Tell us a little bit about this particular agency. Has it been around for long, Stephen?
Yeah, so we have been around since 1999. We are in about 40, 41 counties, I believe, here in Pennsylvania.
So it's a statewide agency?
Yeah, we're almost covering the whole state, so 41 counties. We have about 40 counties in South Carolina as well, where we provide therapy and bill the insurance. And then we also have an alternative education schooling in Florida in one county. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to branch out to Ohio as well. But we've just been here 1 year in Butler County providing independent living for youth. And the other county that we serve for independent living is Indiana County. So within those 40 counties, we have just two that provide independent living. And we're just really hoping to grow and really serve those transition-aged youth.
Is Justice Works a public-private agency, or are you strictly a private organization?
We're a for-profit organization.
For-profit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you are employed by Justice Works, huh?
Correct.
Have you been stationed in other areas where they have programs before you came here?
Yes, I previously worked in Washington County after I graduated from Waynesburg University and worked there for about two and a half years and then came up here to my hometown of Butler County, and now I'm directing and coordinating the independent living program.
Mm-hmm. What age are we talking about? Are these kids, I don't use that term in a negative way, young adults, how old are they?
Yeah, our eligibility for independent living is 14 to 21, so they age out right at their 21st birthday. Mm-hmm. And they no longer can receive the incentives and perks of our program because they do receive an incentive, a stipend for their participation, which is money they can use for their basic living expenses, you know, or their basic needs, whatever it may look like. Mm-hmm. And we feed them in our group instruction, too, as the youth leadership initiative is doing. So
I suppose the first question that many of our listeners would have for somebody who's 14 or 15 years old, they don't have a home for one reason or another. Their family's not there anymore.
Yeah, and that's kind of where Children's Youth Services through Butler County or probation kind of gets involved, and then they reach out to us, and those referrals come our way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and do you have group housing, or are the kids under your wing housed individually? How's that work?
Yeah, so we call ourselves an in-home service provider, so we will meet the youth wherever they're at, whether in their home, their foster home, kinship home, juvenile placement. If we're not serving them there, we do have one apartment right now. We're kind of doing a pilot program with a transitional age youth, mm-hmm. To kind of see what it's like to live on your own where he's not paying any expenses. And
some of the older kids.
Yeah, 18 and older.
17, 18, 19, yeah, they would be in transition.
Yeah.
Whether or not they were in a traditional family situation, they would be about to transition into a whole new life.
Yeah, so we've done that for about 2 months now, and it seems to be going well, so we're hoping that that continues to grow and, like I said, really target that 18, 19, 20 population there.
Mm-hmm. Foster home, everybody knows what that is. What's kinship? Is that staying with another family member, perhaps an uncle or something like that?
Yeah, so aunt, uncle, cousin, a family arrangement. Mm-hmm. So,
and what services would you offer to, let's take an example for a, 17-year-old who's living with an aunt and uncle. Would they need services from your agency?
Yeah, they could definitely benefit.
In what way?
Just, any you know, before they're preparing to be 18 and they're going off on their own, just showing them, giving them that glimpse of what it's like to pay rent, to have monthly expenses. And we teach all those things, money management, food management, job seeking skills, job maintenance skills, anything that's going to help them be a well-rounded person and a productive member of society.
Well, it's a little bit of time very well spent at that age, I think, because if the kids don't acquire those skills, there could be significant problems down the line, not only for them, but for society as well.
Right. It's trying to catch it before it kind of snowballs.
Absolutely. And. So is this help offered one-on-one by counselors, or do you do it in a group session? I mean, you have like five or six kids in a class or something? How's that break down?
Yeah, we actually do both. So similar to the Youth Leadership Initiative, you know, we'll have 30 or 40 kids. We'll have, you know, 15 to 20 of our kids on a monthly basis have classes once or twice a month, focusing on some of those life skill areas. Then we also have staff that go out and meet the youth wherever they're at, like I said, and work on those goals in an individual setting where they need more of that one-on-one attention or focus on that life skill area.
Mm-hmm. Is your agency contracted by governmental agencies like Children and Youth or something like that?
Correct, yeah. We get independent living money through the state and county grant and federal grant.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how long, this may not be in your bailiwick, Stephen, do you know how long Justice Works has been around in other states? You mentioned Florida, South Carolina, I think, somewhere else.
Yeah, so it started in 99, and I believe it was like Combing County, but it was out on the eastern side of the state and has slowly made its way out on this side of the state.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a local office here in Butler?
Yeah, right on Cunningham Street, across from, I believe it's Magistrate Fullerton's office, 230 West Cunningham.
Oh, yes. Okay. I know where that's at. Yeah. Yeah. Can people contact you directly and stop in, or must they be referred by some agency?
They must be referred. So they will come through Children's Youth Services and Juvenile Probation. But if I do get a call, that's where I will direct them to. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have more young boys than girls, or more young men than young women?
I believe it is a split. It's about a 50-50. And I would say, as far as 14 to 21, you know, probably 60 to 70% is in that 17 to 20. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have as many that are in that 14, 15, or 16.
The upper end of the thing. What about 4-H kids? So are there 4-H kids who go to these programs, these youth initiatives gatherings, Amy?
Absolutely, yeah. We have quite a few kids that go. There are some from all different kinds of clubs. We have kids that go from our cooking clubs, our lifestyle clubs, our robotics clubs. So, and they too get a lot out of this because sometimes they're just oblivious to what they have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can understand that. And obviously, you folks who are organizing these events go to great means to make it entertaining in addition to, you know, you don't want it to be like you're taking algebra class or something like that. You know, you want to have some fun while you're there.
Yeah, we definitely want to make it fun and also where you're able to learn. I think we all can agree that that's the best way to learn. So,
Well, I know connecting to tomorrow, I've talked with their folks, and they're concerned with the mentoring of young people. So that would certainly fit in. I know they're involved in this program. Do you know of any other agencies or groups that are involved in the leadership initiative? We've got 4-H, we've got Justice Works, we've got Connecting to Tomorrow.
And there's Stand Tall, and I believe that's all of them.
Stand Tall, is that a drug, like drug promise program or something like that? Does anybody know?
Right. Yeah. I know at the Butler High School, when I was there, it was you were part of that program, and you pledged that you would remain drug-free throughout your high school career and beyond.
I know they've had other programs. I'm not sure that all of them are still operational. Obviously, they're trying different things. There was a program called DARE. Anybody remember that?
Yeah.
D-A-R-E. Maybe this has replaced that. I'm not sure, because I'm pretty sure that was a drug program. Yeah, it's tough. Probably we're talking about the same thing. The best way to get that message across is peer-to-peer, as opposed to having somebody, you know. I mean, to young people this age, somebody who's 28, 29, or 30 years old, that's talking from above, you know? That's top down.
Right, and I think that's been kind of the unique opportunity with, especially 4-H, you know, when they taught the first youth leadership initiative. It's almost kids holding kids accountable, and they're teaching one another instead of, you know, like you were saying, from the top down. So we also have a youth leadership or a youth advisory board with our kiddos, and it's all about holding each other accountable and teaching one another. Hmm.
Well, I didn't know much about Justice Works. Stephen, I appreciate you sharing some information with us. And you've only been here in Butler County for a year. Anticipating growth? So far, so good?
Yes, we're definitely anticipating growth. And it is good to be back in the area where I, you know, grew up going to Knock High School. So it's all familiar.
That's nice. Well, even though, because your first job was, you know, close to where you went to undergraduate school anyway, right?
Yes, yeah, very close, just down the road.
Waynesburg. Wow. Nice to have you back home. Nice to learn a little bit about Justice Works. And 4-H, I know that you're just getting involved in this, Amy.
Right.
Actually, I think probably as of the first of this month, is that right?
Correct, yes.
Isn't that when Jean left to take her new position? So you're still getting your feet wet, but it's a busy time coming up for 4-H.
It is getting to be a busy time. We have the Petting Zoo at the fair, and we have the Butler Farm Show for our roundup. Right. And
the fair is just around the corner. That now gets underway in late June. And you realize we're almost mid-June already. Yeah. And then bada-bing, after that, it's Farm Show. And that's kind of the, well, you would know this. You've been in 4-H for years. That's the culmination of the 4-H year for most of the students anyway, right?
Right, yeah. That's where all the kids bring their projects, regardless of what they are. And they show them off and get prizes and get a little premium money. And so they enjoy it a lot.
Let's go over the details once again for this. Maybe you know a young person who could benefit from this, and you might want to suggest to them or maybe to their parents, guardians, or whatever, hey, this sounds like a pretty good deal. Next week, maybe they ought to think about going to this. Do they call? How do they make a reservation to say they want to come next week?
Yeah, they can give us a call at connecting2tomorrow.com. or 724-431-6025, extension 804, and give us a call by Friday so we can get a head count on food.
Once again, we're talking about Butler County young people, so they need to be a resident of Butler County. Between the ages, I think you said, of 12 and 18, Stephen?
Yes, mm-hmm. Between 12 and 18.
So that's high school on down to, well, junior high, middle school, depending on how every school district divides that differently now. 12 to 18. All of the events are free. The event next week will be free. The date again is the...
June 20th.
June 20th, which is
Tuesday.
Tuesday evening of next week. And it's at St. Andrew Catholic Church, which is right on Route 8 in Center Township, about a half a mile. It's between the mall and Mercer Road.
Correct.
Between the mall and Mazzanti's Beans and Cream Place. So it's right there if you've never been there before. They have a nice hall, by the way, that this is perfect for these events. And the dinner is provided, and it's free. So, my goodness, it'd be a great thing. Yeah. Thanks for stopping in. Good to talk with you today.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to have you here. Stephen Snow from Justice Works and Amy Metrick from Butler County 4-H, Penn State Extension. Say hi to your dad for me, will you?
I will do that.
Okay. Good to see you. More to come on It's Your Turn. We have members of the cast of the Sing Hosanna production of Aladdin. Actually, it's Aladdin Jr., technically. We'll find out what that's all about coming up on the program next. Nice to have you with us on this scorcher of a Tuesday, huh? Temperatures, well, they're now predicting 90, and we're darn near there already. It's a hot, hot day. Back with more on It's Your Turn in just a couple of minutes. We'll be bringing a lot of guests into the studio here, so we'll need an extra minute or so to get everybody mic'd up and organized. We'll be back shortly.
Choices, decisions, quality health care. These are important issues that really hit home. It's a good thing that Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to help. Home health care can help you or your loved one recuperate from an illness, manage a chronic disease, or recover from an injury or operation right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
each month, Radio PA gives you a chance to send a question or comment to Governor Tom Wolf during our Ask the Governor program. Your input can make a difference, just like Thomas in Center County, who was concerned about the state prison population counting toward the governor's proposed $25 per capita fee for state police coverage.
Prison populations included in these township formulas, is there a way to offset that, or is that just the way it's going
to
be?
No, no, I think Thomas makes a really good point. That's not right. So I will make sure that, at least in the proposals that I make, I will modify that we don't count the prison population in that. So I think Thomas makes a very good point. Thank you for that good question.
You can be a part of the next Ask the Governor program by going to PAMatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You can also email the program directly at askthegov@PAMatters.com. That's askthegov, G-O-V, at PAMatters.com. Ask the Governor is an exclusive presentation of Radio Pennsylvania and PAMatters.com.
We are gearing up for Father's Day and giving you a chance to win a foursome for Dad at Bird's Foot Golf Course. During the week of June 12th, tune in to WISR 680 AM during the 10 AM hour for your chance to qualify. Listen for our special Father's Day sound and be the correct caller at 724-283-2525 to win two Pennsylvania wine passes and be entered for a chance to win our grand prize, a foursome at Bird's Foot Golf Course. Fun for Dad. Father's Day giveaway right here on WISR 680 AM.
Well, you can daydream, but if you do, you might miss my show. What show, you ask? The Mr. 60s Rock and Roll Oldies Show, of course. Every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. right here on WISR. We might even teach you to play tambourine like Davy Jones.
Back, folks. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. If you're just joining us, Dave Malarkey is my name. It's the Scorcher of a Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. I ask all my guests as they come into the studio, hot enough for you? And Ralph Christie Jr. just kind of groaned a little bit when I asked him that question. Ralph is the founder and the director of the Sing Hosanna Performing Arts Group. And they're getting ready for their summer show. In fact, this coming weekend, is that right?
This coming weekend, yes.
Now, your summer show is usually a youth production, right?
They are. It's our teenagers and our youth. Mm-hmm. This is our seventh year for doing a production. And actually, 7 years ago, we did an Aladdin and the Wonderful Magic Lamp. This year, we are doing Disney's Aladdin.
Oh, it's a different story?
Kind of the same.
Based on the same folktale, though.
But this is actually based on the film. The one we're doing right now is based on the cartoon, film.
Okay. Well, that's right. I didn't see it, but I can remember seeing the trailers on TV. Right, it was an animated...
Very popular.
You know, for those of us of a certain age, animated films were pretty popular, you know, back when Walt Disney was still alive.
They were, yeah. He really frontiered that whole... genre, and then going in with Mary Poppins and adding live people with cartoons too. They were the first to do that.
Once that technology became available, because the original ones, Snow White, I don't know, was Bambi? Was that Walt Disney?
It started with Mickey Mouse.
Of course,
Steamboat cartoon. Yeah.
In fact, Walt Disney did the voice for Mickey Mouse.
I didn't know that
originally. Yeah, but he was a pioneer. And yeah, you're right. When the technology became available, that they could mix real people in with the animated characters, and that was the Mary Poppins era.
Correct, yeah.
But who would believe, still today, especially with Disney, they're still popular now.
They just keep reinventing. Yeah. They just came out with a new Beauty and the Beast film. So it's good stuff. It's very good stuff.
So details on what's actually Aladdin Jr. That's the Disney
It is. Script. This is the shorter version of the original version by Disney. It's this coming weekend, June the 17th. That's a Saturday evening at 7:30. And Sunday afternoon, June 18th at 2 o'clock. And it's at the Suck Up Theater at the Butler County Community College.
Do you have to get tickets in advance, or can you?
There will be tickets available. Well, there are tickets available at Maze Music, but there will also be tickets available at the door. Mm-hmm. It's good for a family to come. All tickets are $12. The seats are not reserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely a family
show.
Yes,
much so.
Yeah. Aladdin Jr. Well, let's meet some of the principals here, including Aladdin himself, and that's Zane Gallardi. Zane, is this your first show with Sing Hosanna, or have you done shows before? Just move that, swing that mic over a little bit. That's the way. There you go.
This is not my first show with Sing Hosanna.
Your first rodeo, huh?
I did Beauty and the Beast last fall with them as LeFou.
Mm-hmm. LeFou. Is that the
sidekick?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You were the comic relief, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you're not comic relief in Aladdin. You're the guy. You're the title character. You also play another part, though, right?
Prince Ali.
Prince Ali is his alter ego, sort of.
Ah.
He has to turn into a prince to win Jasmine's heart. So he wishes to become a prince, and he ends up being Prince Ali. Sometimes he forgets he's Prince Ali and then does his Aladdin voice and goes back and forth. So it is kind of comical.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess Aladdin, Ali, Aladdin. It would be easy to get mixed up. I don't want to confuse you any more than you are, Zane. Okay, just swing that mic over a little bit here. We'll talk to our next guest, and that is Trey. Is that right?
No, I'm Isaac.
You're Isaac. Easy for me to mix up the Hickson brothers here. Isaac, what part do you play?
I play Iago, the parrot.
A parrot?
Yeah.
You play a parrot?
Yeah.
You don't look anything like a parrot.
Well, my costume is the parrot, and I'm Jafar's sidekick, the parrot.
I see. Do you have a parrot head? You have to wear a parrot head.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there are famous parrot heads already. They go around to these concerts and stuff. What's that guy's name?
I can't think of who the...
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah. The rocker.
Jimmy Buffett, is that who it is?
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it must be a little hot in that parrot head with the weather like this, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Actually, he's in a parrot costume with a wig, and his face will be exposed.
I see. Wings? Do you have wings?
Yeah, the wings are pretty good.
Oh, you want parrot wings, of course. Yeah, yeah. Parrots are very colorful. Do you have a colorful costume?
Yeah, it's really colorful.
Okay, now this other Hickson is Trey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you mixed up with your brother there, Trey. What part do you play?
I play the genie who helps out Aladdin after he finds his lamp.
Mm-hmm. Genie? Aladdin, is there a magic lamp involved here, Trey?
Yes, there is a magic lamp. It looks really cool, too.
I see. And how the heck do you ever crawl inside this lamp?
I don't know.
Oh, it's a sleight of hand? You're not actually in there?
Yeah.
I see.
Magic. It's all magic.
Magic, yes. It's magic.
Well, the other thing that I remember from childhood, reading the story of Aladdin, I think I actually did read the Arabian folktale. There was a magic carpet.
There is a magic carpet, yes.
Zane, is there a magic carpet in this?
Yes, there is a magic carpet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, better than a 64 Mustang, I guess. You got to get around, you know, magic carpet. Now, you are the one that finds the lamp.
Yes.
And rub the lamp.
Yeah.
And Trey pops up.
And the genie appears, yes.
So... here's a theatrical stage trick, Ralph. How the heck do you ever pull that off?
It's called magic. You have to come and see the show. That's all I'm going to say.
I was involved in a show, and it was deliberately primitive. It was actually billed as a skit during Spring Week festivities. But we were doing, you don't mind if I tell you a little story?
No.
We were doing our adaptation of Hansel and Gretel, which was pretty wild. I may still have that script lying around somewhere. I'm not sure. But it was pretty whacked out. But we had the Wicked Witch in our version was actually transformed into a gorgeous witch. And we had to do this, and we were performing this in a tent. You know, it was a theater in the round and a tent. And we came up with the wildest idea to do this. We had a long piece of plastic pipe that ran down between the seats back to where you couldn't see. And it came out on the edge of the stage where the Wicked Witch stood. And it was filled with flour. And at the time of the transformation, somebody went to the other end of the tube and blew on that thing. And the flower all puffed up, and the people all went, "Oh, isn't that amazing?" And while that was happening, we switched bodies.
Cool.
You know,
cool.
I thought it was pretty good.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But you're not going to do that? You're going to do
something else? No, we're not. Okay. I can't give away the secrets there.
I can understand that. Let me ask a little bit about these young people. Trey, have you done Sing Hosanna shows before or any other shows?
Yeah, the last show I did was Beauty and the Beast. I was also LeFou. Me and Zane, we both played LeFou. We split the time. And there was another kid that played with us because we did three performances that time.
Now, are you the older of the two brothers or are you guys twins?
I'm the older one. I don't like to be told that we look the same height, like twins, because I always had this competition with him to see who's taller, and it's gone back and forth, but I'm currently taller, so I'm proud of that.
I was going to say, you look a little taller sitting down. Well, there's nothing wrong with saying that you look a little bit like your brother. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, but we have a little bit of friendly competition.
Oh, there's a little rivalry there, huh?
Yep, sibling rivalry.
Well, I can understand that, because I used to go through the same thing. Believe me, there come a time in life when you won't feel that way. Trust me. And I know you're just kidding a little bit now. Where do you go to school?
I go to Seneca Valley.
And what grade will you be in? Listen to this. I hate to talk about the start of the new school year because you're just getting out, right, for summer vacation. What grade will you be in this fall?
I'm going into eighth grade this year.
Eighth grade? Is that like what, junior high or middle school or something?
It's just junior high right now. So.
Junior high? Yeah, well, it's a fun time in your life. Let me slide that mic over there to Isaac. Isaac, what grade will you be in this fall?
Fifth.
Fifth grade at where? What school?
Evan City Middle School.
Okay, also obviously Evan City School District. It's common, isn't it, Ralph? You've had down through the years, and this is what, 30-some years for Sing Hosanna now?
38.
38. In a lot of cases, you've had family members who've been in shows, worked shows together. Yeah. All had the same show together?
We've had three generations of people in the same show. A grandmother, daughter, grandchild, many times.
So the young Hickson lads are by no means unique. In fact, they're kind of carrying on a Sing Hosanna tradition.
And it's a large clan. There's, I think, six of them.
Eight, actually.
Eight of them.
Eight.
Six kids?
Six kids. Eight.
You'd have a hard time getting them all in the same show. Maybe not. I'm not sure.
I think they're going to try.
Zane Gallardi, you said you were in Beauty and the Beast. Have you done other shows before? Or just that one?
That was my first show with Sing Hosanna, but I have done shows before that.
Where do you go to school, Zane?
I go to Lincoln Park Performing Arts Charter School.
Oh, yeah, that's over in, like, I don't know, Midland. Is it Midland? Is that where it is? Yeah. That's hard by the Ohio River there.
Yes.
Just west of Beaver.
Yes.
I've been there, actually. You're not far from the Ohio border.
Right, correct.
Yeah. You don't have to go too much further past Midland into
your
Ohio.
The nuclear plants or something's right there.
Oh, yeah, the shipping port nuclear plant along the river, too. That's a pretty area. I've been there. All of these young people, and we're going to meet three more members of the cast, too, in just a moment or so here, all part of Disney's Aladdin Jr. We'll meet three more of the cast members. We'll talk a little bit about this is a musical, isn't it?
It is a musical, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit about the music when we come back. Take a break. You're listening to It's Your Turn. Here on WISR, the Tuesday edition. And we'll be back to meet more cast members from Aladdin Jr. Here on It's Your Turn right after these words. We'll be right back.
Hey, America. We need to have a little talk. I don't know if you've noticed, but we got a lot of food in this country. A lot of peaches, a lot of corn, a lot of apples, a lot of everything. We've got so much food that we can't even eat it all. So if we got all this extra food, how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? I just don't get it. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to the hungry kids who need it. They can get you food even if you live in Idaho or Alaska or somewhere crazy like that. This isn't complicated. We got extra food and we've got hungry kids. Feeding America's done the math. Now it's your turn. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. I know you got internet on your phone, so what are you waiting for? We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, friends. Guests with us from the Sing Hosanna Performing Arts Group here in Butler. And this weekend, the youth and the teenagers of Sing Hosanna will be presenting the musical Disney's Aladdin Jr., which, as director Ralph Christie told us, is it's actually an adaptation of an adaptation, right?
From it has the whole story in it, and they just have just combined it to a shorter show.
Mm-hmm. This is actually a folk tale from the Middle East, Arabia.
Yep, correct, yes.
I'm sure that down through the centuries it's been, you know, changed around a little bit here and there, but most folks would have heard of it whenever they were kids. Let's meet our next cast members here. First of all, Daniel Ammerman. Is that right, Daniel Ammerman? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yep.
Yeah. Is a member of the cast. Who are you playing, Daniel?
I'm the Sultan, the father to Jasmine.
Mm-hmm. Is that one of the bad guys, or are you just kind of so-so, or you're a bad guy that turns into a good guy? What's the story?
I'm the strict father who... Yeah, the strict father.
Mm-hmm. He's the one of the good guys.
Mm-hmm. And who's Jasmine, by the way?
Jasmine is Sam Barr.
And she is the...
Sultan's daughter.
Okay.
Princess Jasmine.
Okay.
Sultan's like a king. He's the king of the territory there.
Okay. Also with us is Luke Pfeiffer. Pfeiffer, is that right, Luke?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And what part do you play?
I am the villain Jafar.
Jafar, that sounds villainous, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes. So what's your connection with the storyline?
Well, Jafar is basically, he's the advisor to the Sultan, but he also secretly wants to be the Sultan. He wants to have the power. He wants to rule the kingdom.
Ah. Does the Sultan know about your nefarious plans?
Well, I hope not.
Very good. And also with us is Lily Mashmeyer. Lily, how did I do on the pronunciation of that last name there, Mashmeyer?
It was good.
Pretty good?
Yeah.
Nice to have you here, Lily. You, I believe, are the oldest cast member that's visiting with us today. Is that right?
No.
How about the youngest? Are you the youngest?
Yeah.
Far from it. What part are you playing in Aladdin, Lily?
I am the Iago for the other night.
Oh, I see. So you've double cast the parrot part. Yeah. Have you done any shows before, Lily?
My first show was Seussical, the musical,
mm-hmm.
and then I've done all of them up to now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you have quite a resume already.
Yeah.
Yeah? What grade are you in? What grade will you be in this
I'm going
fall?
Into fourth grade.
And where do you go to school, Lily?
Evan City Elementary.
Okay, so that's Seneca Valley School District as well. You got a lot of Seneca Valley people on the cast here. Yeah. So are you enjoying summer vacation so far?
Yeah.
How long have you been out? A week or so?
We got out May 31st, and there was only 2 hours that day.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been out for a while.
Yeah, you're lucky. You know, summer schools are just getting out right now. Yeah. Well, nice to have you with us today, Lily. We'll talk to you a little bit more in just a moment or so. I mentioned before the break, this is a musical. So are there lots of musical numbers or... A handful? Or what's
yeah, there's story? A handful. Probably the biggest one is, what is it, New World, Brave, what's the Brave New World? Or
it's Whole New World.
Whole New World. Think of a different book
yes.
there.
Brave
Whole
New World.
Whole New World, yeah.
Aldous Huxley. Yeah.
yeah, yes.
Somebody else.
Yeah. And then there's a big production, Friend Like Me, which is the big genie number. Everybody's in that mm-hmm. that number on the whole company.
This is after the genie pops out of the lamp.
Correct. Yeah. And there's also Prince Ali, which is the big production number when Aladdin's entering with all of his attendants, which is the whole company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge number too. And the kids are just having a blast with the choreography and so much energy. I've never seen so many kids with such energy. Mm-hmm. They're doing a super job.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you guys, Daniel or Luke, have to do solos? Do you do songs by yourself, or is it all like ensemble pieces or duets or something?
The Iago actors and I have a song which is also reprised with a couple guards later on in the show. That's the closest thing to really a solo that either of us have.
Mm-hmm. So it's designed, obviously, for younger kids to kind of get their feet wet on stage.
It's actually the same music that is actually in the film, which is actually in the adult version of Aladdin also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same music, so it's really nice.
Has Sing Hosanna ever done this show before, this version, the Disney script?
We have not. This is our first time.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of tough when you're a performing group as active as you are, Sing Hosanna, to... find material that you haven't done before.
You know? I'm constantly looking. Yeah.
Well, that's, I don't want to say it's a problem on Broadway, but it's something that Broadway does a lot. They do revivals all the time.
They do.
Shows
yeah.
they've already done before, you know.
And their record of attendance on Broadway nowadays, so there's people are going to the theater, which is great.
We just had the Tony Awards a couple of nights ago. Best revival play was Jitney by the late August play, Wilson
yeah. right.
by Pittsburgh
yeah.
author.
Yeah.
So, yeah, revivals do very well sometimes.
And the best revival musical was Hello, Dolly! With Bette Midler.
Mm. Oh, yes. I saw on YouTube her her remarks after she got the award. They were
she
trying
was quite
to,
talkative.
They were trying to shoo her off stage. You know, the orchestra pipes up and
she's still talking.
She dressed them down. Yeah. I want to say a little bit more. That's our bet.
That's sure. true. Yes.
So anyway, Broadway does more and more revivals, and you know, if you're a performing arts group, my goodness, you put on what? At least three shows a year.
We do.
Sometimes we do. More.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think it's great to have the revivals because it's teaching the younger people who don't usually know those shows. They're dated, but they're reviving them so they have a modern twist to them. So it's great that younger people are learning the classics of theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you are, if you're a younger person, even a young adult, I mean, you want to have a chance to do Oklahoma
right.
or Carousel
Correct,
or
yeah.
Sound of Music or something
right.
like that. You want to. Goodness, they're classics. Let me ask a little bit about our cast members who are visiting with us here. Daniel Ammerman, I don't think I asked where you're going to go, where you are going to school, Daniel.
I'm actually homeschooled, so. But I just finished the standardized testing for eighth grade earlier today.
And did you pass?
I don't know. Hopefully.
Really? Hey, if I was homeschool, I'd say I passed with flying colors,
yeah,
baby.
That's right. He would know.
It was A-plus with honors, you know? No, I realize you don't call your own shots, so that's good. Well, good for you. Will you continue to do that, or don't you know yet? Has your family not decided?
I'm pretty sure we have, or we're going to. I've actually never gone to a public school or a private school. I've been homeschooled my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good for you. And what about you, Luke?
I actually have the same situation. I've also been homeschooled my entire life. I'm actually graduating high school this year, so that's fun.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do next year? You know yet?
Well, I hope to primarily focus on having a more full-time job, pursue careers in performing and acting.
Great. Yeah. Hey, that's one of the great things about young people, either young ones like Lily here, or older amateur actors like Luke and Daniel and Zane, they can prepare themselves for a hobby, an avocation later in life. You know,
that'd be great.
Amateur theater. Huh?
Yep.
It's wonderful. The same is exactly the same that it is, by the way, for Sing Hosanna.
And even if they're preparing for professional life, they could even
could
go
be.
Out for that. Yeah.
Yeah, could be as well. We have had some
yes.
People that were talented enough to turn professional, come out of our ranks. Sing Hosanna's production of Aladdin Jr. this weekend. Two shows,
yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. June the 17th, Saturday evening at 7:30. June the 18th, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Tickets are $12 per seat. Seats are not reserved. You can buy tickets at the door, and it's at the Suck Up Theater at BC3.
There are a couple of other things I want to talk about, but we need to check midday lottery numbers here, so we'll take a break, and we shall do that. By the way, there was a Powerball winner on Saturday night.
I heard something about somebody winning, and it was the only person winning. Is that
yeah,
the
one? Yeah, it was out in California somewhere. Yeah. $440 million or something
yeah,
like that.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah. You could buy your own genie with that, baby.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
We'll check numbers. Be back in just a moment here on It's Your Turn on WISR.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 55-55. The pick three, 271-271. The pick four, 5308. The pick five, 59734. The wild ball for each of those, 1. The treasure hunt, 13, 21, 22, 24, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Talking with Ralph Christie Jr., the founder and director of Sing Hosanna, several members of his cast of Aladdin Jr. with us here in the studio as well. Do you shut down operations in the summertime once you've done your youth show, Ralph, or do you press on?
Oh, we keep going. Our performing arts camping workshop is July the 10th through the 15th. It runs in the mornings for ages 7 through 18. It's called Camp Create a Musical, and that's exactly what the kids do. They start on Monday and storyline. We could do characters. They come up with a musical. We put music in, change some of the words to go with the storyline that they're doing. Kids get to paint all the scenery. And then by Saturday morning, we're doing a 20-minute original musical. So it's a lot of fun.
Wow. That'd be a great opportunity. And that's a week-long
It is, yeah, Monday through Saturday, the first full week after the 4th of July. And that does require a registration fee. And then in August, we do our comedy dinner theater, which we've been doing for over 20 years. And this year, it's August the 12th. That's a Saturday, in two sessions at St. Peter's Parish Hall. And the show I picked is called Santa Sees a Shrink. So he really doesn't want to do his duties, and his wife visits him. He needs to see a shrink. That's pretty funny.
This is in August.
August, yeah.
Well, you always do a Christmas show, right?
We do, yeah. The last couple of years we have, yeah. Usually a comedy. We have a full-course meal, and then we have themed basket raffles, and it's just a lot of fun. And then come fall, we will be doing another Broadway show, and the show has not been announced yet.
Mm-hmm. You're still mulling it over?
I am. Close to a decision, but not quite there yet. Mm-hmm.
Do you hold auditions for your Sing Hosanna productions?
We do for the fall shows and the spring shows because there's leads and so forth. If in the spring and the fall show, if you just want to be in the ensemble, you do not have to audition because we love to have everybody in the show. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you like big casts, right?
I do. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. 60 to 100 is fine with me. Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of guessing that the costumes for this Aladdin show are going to be quite colorful.
They are. They are. They're pretty cool. They're from actually my biblical collection of costumes that I have. So we have recycled some of those, and some are pretty ornate.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lily, I know you're going to be colorful because you're playing the parrot, huh?
Yeah.
What's the parrot's name again?
Iago.
I see.
I think Lily should do a line from the show in her parrot voice.
I think so, too. How about it?
Do a squawk to start with.
Okay. Which line do you want me to do?
Whatever.
Okay.
Quickly.
I think I'll change the subject.
That's her parrot voice.
That's a pretty good parrot voice. I like the squawk, especially, Lily. That's very good. And what about you gentlemen? Costumes, colorful costumes, robes, shawls, that sort of thing?
Yeah, the costumes are very interesting. Some of them are very... It varies. Some are very movie accurate. I really like some of these. And then some are incredibly original. My costume is very different from the costume from the movies. Mine is much more sparkle-centric.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different. But yeah, no, the costumes are amazing for this one.
Mm-hmm. Had you heard of the story of Aladdin before you ever did this show? Is that still, do kids still, I don't know, see that on video or whatever?
Aladdin has always been one of my more favorite ones because I've always liked just like the genie scenes, and Robin Williams voicing him is hilarious.
Oh, Robin Williams, yeah, the late Robin Williams. I think the original folk tale, I'm going back a few years trying to remember this, I think it was called 1001 Arabian Nights, wasn't it? Isn't that the...
It was, yeah.
Yeah, 1001 Arabian Nights.
That's part of the Scheherazade tales, all that was mm-hmm. all together, yeah.
The mysterious Middle East, mm-hmm. yeah. Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin Jr. this weekend at Suckup. Saturday evening?
Saturday evening, June the 17th at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon, June the 18th at 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Tickets will be available at the box office?
Yes. $12 per seat. All tickets are $12, and the seats are not reserved.
It's the youth and teenagers of Sing Hosanna presenting Aladdin Jr. this weekend. Good luck, all. Thanks for stopping in and chatting with us here today. Good to talk to you all. Ralph, always good to see you.
Oh, thank you. Same here. Yeah.